Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 The Yakuza Kick Radio!
This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and baby, Jesus! Help us.
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in California!
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
The shit is bananas.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, bearded dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn, you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope on this cowboy, guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that doctor, homie. Fuck that. Black dude, holler.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker. Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J. Cat Morris.
You are now listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
I'll slap you in the mouth with my dick.
It is Wednesday, June 26, 2013. Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J. Cat Morris. After a week off, I'm back. I got some stuff to talk about. I should have a guest on a little bit later. I initially had planned to have B-Boy on this week, as well as Ian Rotten. Ian Rotten coming on later in the show. Turned out last minute, a local fed over by B-Boy needed him to, help train out, help out train over there. And, priorities are priorities. And, obviously, the amount of knowledge that B-Boy has to share, with students and stuff like that is worth far, far more than, bullshitting a little bit on the podcast. So hopefully B-Boy will be on next week. Definitely, absolutely no offense taken on that, because like I said, what he has to offer to the wrestling business to me is very, very valuable, and by all means. So next week we should have B-Boy on. So I apologize for anybody who's looking to hear from him, but before you know it, next week he'll be here and all of that. So no big deal. Got some definite things to cover. Definite. Wow. Take 1 week off and I forget how to talk. It's not like riding a bike, folks. Last week I didn't do a show, a combination of reasons. I had my race coming up, which was actually this past Sunday. And, I had to get ready for that. The Sunday before that, I did not do well. I had definitely always battling my demons and trying to steer myself in a positive direction. It doesn't always work out for me. So I had that going on, and then I had to really kind of rebound from that and steer myself in a positive direction, finish out the week. I also had my Miami Heat playing that week. finishing out the series, which I'll talk about in a little while. But figure let me jump into the whole race thing because, you know, it was something I was preparing for and this and that. So what I did is I did the Foam Fest 5K. It was the Tri-State waiver version or whatever you want to call it. Because they tour all over the country. It's another 5K obstacles and all of that stuff. And, you know, it was the lighter of the two that I have scheduled. The next one I have lined up is going to be in August, and that's the Warrior Dash. So that's much more severe. This one was more fun-based. So, you know, obviously, you know, obstacles and this type of thing. So, you know, it sets up where, I've never done one of these things before. So personally, I would consider any of it challenging because I've never done it before. And I've never been a runner. I started doing the running thing maybe like 2 months ago. And I've been making like leaps and bounds in the right direction and really trying to, you know, step my game up with that. So, you know, I've been doing well with that. So I went in it pretty confident. And, I personally know I did completely awesome with it. I was a little surprised on, you know, what I was met with. You know, like I said, it is very fun based and all that. So, a lot of people, and I mean a lot of people, didn't take it as seriously as I did. Now I didn't, you know, expect it to be some kind of crazy grueling competition where people are, you know, out for glory and just trying to, you know, bury each other or anything like that. But, you know, I mean, it isn't all that cheap. And, a lot of people were just kind of down to walk it. And it really surprised me somewhat. The obstacles themselves to me were extremely, extremely easy. I don't want to keep repeating that the thing is fun based, but I think that was their goal, is to make it doable by, you know, many different types of people. It wasn't just built for, you know, athletes or people really trying to test themselves. So I'm not, you know, mad at them about that or anything like that. Really not like a whole lot of complaints and just, you know, my criticism and my review on the whole thing. Now, the most challenging part of the whole thing that I had the very most fun with is, now, initially this thing was supposed to be staged in, Englishtown, New Jersey. And, you know, months back when I actually signed up for it, that's what it was, Englishtown. Well, that's only about an hour away. And, you know, I know where that's at, and it's not any different of terrain. So it was like, all right, then we're getting a little bit closer, getting maybe 2 months out, and they had to switch the venue because something happened where the Foam Fest has these big blow-up obstacles. They have a couple blow-up obstacles. They have one that's like, it's called the Death Drop. It's like a three-story high water slide type gimmick goes almost straight down. I mean, it goes pretty steep, and you got to climb up the one side of that, and then you slide down the thing. Like I said, it's like three stories high, and it's inflatable. And then they have like 30 foot like blow up slip and slide gimmicks where, you know, you run and they put all the foam on there and you slide through that shit. So, you know, stuff like that, and they kind of base their whole deal off of that. And they weren't able to use those blow-ups in Jersey because they didn't get the permits for the blow-ups in time or something, you know, bullshit permits. So I think they actually may be doing it in Jersey next year. It's just the permits were going to take longer or some shit like this. Anyway, they would either had to cancel the event or moved it out of state. So they moved it to Tuxedo Park, New York, which was supposed to be about 2.5 hours away. It only took about 2 hours for me, thankfully. Well, the thing about that is you move it to Tuxedo Park, New York. That's in the mountains of New York. So now the terrain is not just, you know, some town in Jersey and this and that. It's the New York mountains. So, and it's actually a ski resort that it was placed on. So you're talking very, very hilly, and you're not talking smooth ground. You're talking rocky mountains. You know, you're running on rocks. And I don't mean gravel or you know, small rocks. I mean, like, all sorts of jagged rocks coming out of all angles. And, you know, more or less after, like, Ninja Run, where you, like, jump from rock to rock. And that shit was just, you know, up and down hills. That shit was the most fun to me, straight up. Like, you had people trying to, like, walk and, like, slowly holding each other's hands and shit. And I'm passing these people, like, jumping from rock to rock. That shit was so much fun. And I enjoyed that part quite a bit. So that was the you know, most intense obstacle about the whole thing, as far as me trying to push myself, was those rocks. One of those, they had those three-story slides. One of them, the day before, someone went down it with their keys and popped the motherfucker. So they had like an hour and a half wait for the one fucking slide. So we're standing on the side of this fucking mountain with the sun just beating the shit out of us for like an hour and a half. So that was definitely what wore me down the most. You know, by the end of the day, definitely felt like I was through some shit just because I stood in the sun for an hour and a half on a mountain. But I mean, honestly, just finishing the race, I could have went right back to the start and did it again. I mean, there was really no, it wasn't enough constant moving to really wear me out. It didn't test me like that. You know, I had tons of fun. I don't want to, you know, sound discouraging or anything like that. It was definitely tons of fun. I'm doing it again next year for sure, no matter where they put it. But, you know, and I recommend that. The next one coming up, like I said, the Warrior Dash is going to be fucking insane. And like I've said in the past, if anyone does want to help out and donate towards my cause, it helps the, you know, St. Jude Children's Hospital. It's www.stjudewarriors.org/JCAT. So you could, you know, if you want to go on, help me out there. You know what I mean? Well, it helps the kids, you know, just that type of thing. So there's that. But what else was I going to say about that? But yeah, personally, I really recommend these type of things. And the thing about it is, you know, like I've said, I'm trying to battle my demons. I'm trying to, you know, steer myself in a positive direction. And, you know, there are people who can focus on different athletic things. So you have something you're training, but there's something you're training for. Because me, you know, different than a lot of other people, you know, and I'm not saying it to sound like a dick or anything like that, but it's not like I have 100 pounds that I'd like to drop. And, you know, that my goal is to do that. I mean, of course, you know, I'm not the bulkiest dude in the world. So, of course, I'd like to gain more muscle, you know, through training. And I'd like to, you know, increase my size, you know, strength and all that stuff that way. But overall, I'm pretty naturally athletic. So, again, like my goal can't really be I need to drop this amount of weight or I need to do this or I need to fit in these pants or any of that type of shit because it's just not me, you know. Like I could, you know, when I was doing this, you know, 7-day drinking stuff and I was drinking a minimum of 90 beers a week, I still weighed 160 pounds and, you know, no gut on me and no nothing like that. And I mean, but obviously, you know, it does definitely takes a toll on you in other ways. You know, you feel that shit and clearly also more mental damage than anything else. But yeah, so, you know, you don't really have that type of goal. And then some people have, like, their sports, you know, they have, like, oh, okay, well, you know, wrestlers, even, you know, just say, like, Drake Younger. I mean, this guy was able to, you know, turn his life around and get himself in the right direction. Now, he can push himself that much harder in wrestling. And he could, you know, achieve his goals and steer himself towards things in wrestling. So there's, like, you know what I mean? There's an end game. There's somewhere to go with it. So the point I'm trying to make is, when I first started trying to be positive and do this type of thing, first thing I did was signed up for these things because now I have something to train towards. I have some kind of goal, something that I know I'm going to have to show up and I'm going to have to bring my A game. Because again, you could train, you could do whatever, but if there's no goal, if there's no something at the end to drive yourself at, I'm not really sure where the motivation comes from. Of course, you know, just deep down going, hey, I'd love to be better. I get it. Yeah, that's cool. But I needed something. So now this is it, you know, and the Warrior Dash is going to be the shit for me. Like I said, this Foam Fest was easy as hell to me. It was tons of fun. But it showed me where I'm at. It showed me that I can be completely in the right direction. A lot of people there weren't even close to where I'm at. And, you know, it's just honesty. And I'm just, you know, pretty pleased. But in the same token, I know that this next one is not going to be any type of easy on me. So that's that. I guess I'll leave it at that as far as that. But, you know, anybody ever got any questions about this whole thing? Like I said, I highly recommend these type of races and obstacle races. You know, if you're a grown-ass dude, you don't have a sport that you're in. You don't have maybe you do have some weight to lose, but this is also an end game where you can do something athletic to the best of your ability where you didn't think you'd do it before. You was just sitting on your ass, you weren't doing nothing. This could be something that, you know, you go do, and it could be a big deal to you. To me, it's like a playground for adults. You know, you go in there and like, now you got to go climb your shit. Now you got to, you know, crawl under this shit. And you don't do shit like that when you're an adult anymore. You kind of fade into that just day to day. You know, go to work, do what work, you know, provides for you, maybe do a little bit at the gym, try to keep in shape, da da da, and go home, go to sleep. You know, you don't get to climb, fucking jump around and shit like a kid. So I enjoy it. So I'm going to try to, you know, continue to do this type of thing. Yeah, so that's that. Like I said, the other thing, my Miami Heat rallied back to win their second NBA title in a row, won back-to-back titles. LeBron went on to be the third player in NBA history to win back-to-back NBA MVPs and Finals MVPs in the history of basketball. So the funniest thing to me was at the end of Game 6, fourth quarter in the end of Game 6, you saw all these little LeBron-hating motherfuckers jumping all over to Facebook. Bye, LeBron. Oh, look who's not clutch. Oh, fucking, I feel bad for the kids who are being taught that LeBron's one of the best. He's not even top 10, blah, 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 blah. Everybody had shit to say because they thought it was in the bag. Then who wasn't clutch and who fucking came through? Ray Allen hits this fucking shot, puts us into fucking OT. You know, LeBron and company come back and fucking close out. Boom. Fucking Game 7. You know what I mean? And then you go into Game 7, and they do their thing, and they win the title. And then the only thing at that point, and this is the funniest shit in the world to me. The only thing at that point, you see, basically the Heat haters, the LeBron haters, this is what they do. They wave the Michael Jordan flags all year long. Like, that, it doesn't matter. He's not Mike. Oh, it doesn't matter. It's like, dude, it's fucking over. He doesn't have to be Michael Jordan. He's fucking LeBron James. I know that's hard for you guys to stomach because his name bothers you. See, and that's the other thing that I don't really understand about LeBron and the people that are so fucking deeply against him. I really think about it. And I sit there and I go, you know what? Their hatred goes so much further. It goes like he must have, like, fucked their girlfriend. He must have, like, they must have, like, got lost in Ohio, like, fucking back in the day when LeBron lived in the hood and maybe stuck him for, maybe robbed him. I don't know what the fuck. Like, there's got to be something, like, a minimum of, like, maybe the motherfucker was playing Call of Duty with you a couple months ago and, like, shit got too personal when you know what I mean? Y'all was talking on the mic and shit got too personal and now you really don't like that dude. I mean, it's just got to be something. It seems so fucking deep and personal. It's like, not to just, hey, man, he went to Miami and I don't like how he did Cleveland and shit. There's motherfuckers all over the place that are just like, no, fuck that, I hate him, I can't stand him, no, LeBron's this, he's such a pussy, he's this, he's that. Like, dude, he's one of the best basketball players in the league, whether you're a fucking Heat fan, whether you're a LeBron James fan. And if you can't stomach even saying that shit as a human being, then you just, you're in denial, acting completely fucking ridiculous off of what hatred? Like I said, I don't know. I don't know what the fuck he personally did to you people, but I'm convinced that there's some personal shit. There's got to be some actual personal shit that he did to you guys, because I've disliked the shit out of some sports figures, but to go to that extent, there's people that don't even like basketball that are all fired up over how much they hate LeBron. I don't know. I just don't get it. But anyway, so then they go off of that, and then they go, oh, LeBron flops. All he does is flop. And, you know, we went through the Pacers series hearing that type of shit, too. And there were guys fined from Miami. Even Bosch was fined from Miami. And there was people fined from fucking from Indiana for flopping. So it's not just LeBron. It's not, dude. And the same type of shit was happening in the San Antonio series. You know what I mean? So you could be the guy who sits there and watches two basketball teams play and sees a team win and then goes, okay, what excuse can I make for that shit? Or you can go, hey, man, obviously they got a lot of good fucking basketball players on the court. Oh, the same good basketball players that you'd whine about and go, this dream team, it's not fair. They bought their team, this and that. But it's the same people saying that. They bought all the best players in the league. They're the same people making excuses. Oh, well, the refs are on their side. Oh, he's flopping, and they're just taking his side on it. Like, so, according to you, you're mad because they're the best players and Miami bought all the best players, but then you're also mad because they're not that good and the refs are just giving them the game. That one of those things can't exist. You know what I mean? They're either the best players and that's why they're winning games, which is kind of what makes the most sense, or, you know, the refs are just giving them the games and they don't deserve the shit. So that's that, but even going through this, if you watch these bang-out series, these guys are still just straight-up dudes. They're straight-up humans. They're basketball players. They got to go out there and earn those games like anybody else. They played the young Indiana Pacers. Look what it went. You know what I mean? With that banging, grueling-ass series. The Heat weren't just blowing people away because it wasn't fair and, oh, my God. Like, so what is the hatred? Every other team stands just as good a chance. In the long run, if they win it in 7 games, well, then you weren't that far from beating that team. They can't be so unbelievably unbeatable in everybody's mind when they're going 7 games with everybody. It's just as hard fought. And me as a Heat fan, I'm watching that shit like fucking on the edge of my seat because I'm like, man, I hope we pull this out. But people are just, oh, it's just a foregone conclusion. They just already won it. Well, fucking man, you need to go down to Vegas and shit, I guess, because if a team's going 7 games and you already got it in the bag because they just bought their team and they're so good and the refs are on their side too, so they got more players on the court, all this bullshit, like, get over yourself, man. Either like fucking basketball or don't. And the fact that the Heat are winning and you don't like it, that's your bad, dude. That's not – you don't have to be a Heat fan. But to just be blind and just start making excuses like a little bitch, you're like, this is what people do, like, little punk-ass kids do. When they lose, they can't take a loss. So they got to complain, and they got to whine, and they kick stuff. And, you know, and here's the biggest example of that. That is the final excuse that you will get from every one of these haters after the Heat win the fucking title. It's not real anyway. The NBA is fixed. If that isn't some little kid shit, I don't know what is. You'll sit there and watch a 7-game fucking series, and then when the people you don't want to win, when the people you don't want to win wins, you just get to go, it's not even real. Fucking fake anyway. That's some funny shit. I invite every one of you motherfuckers to keep chanting that shit because you sound like the biggest retards I have ever fucking heard in my life. It's the funniest excuse ever to just go, it's fucking not real anyway. They must have paid Ginobili off because that's what they were up to the whole time. Like, get the fuck out of here. Oh, man. Ginobili has a bad game, throws away a couple passes. See, he's in on it. You fucking people are silly. Jesus Christ. Oh, the NBA is fixed. They only want LeBron to win. That's why he lost the fucking title 2 years ago to Dallas, right? Because fucking David Stern's in his fucking pocket. What if they just want him to almost win that year? It was so fixed they wanted him to almost win. Or was that their way of building suspense for the next two worked title changes? for their next two title runs. Was that the gimmick? Was that the storyline they were rolling with? Get the fuck out of here. If fucking Indiana won that fucking series, nobody would have been saying shit about being fixed. San Antonio won that fucking series, wasn't nobody saying shit about being fixed. In the end of Game 6, when they were screaming about LeBron going home, nobody was saying shit about the NBA being a work. Nobody. Bye, LeBron, you fucking bitch. Bye. Go home. Who's clutch now? Fucking go by. Fucking MVP my ass. They had all the shit talk in the world. I didn't see the word work in there once. I didn't see it's rigged. I didn't see any of that shit being brought up when they thought the fucking Heat were going home. And then as soon as the Heat are going home with another fucking trophy, it's a work. It's fixed. You motherfuckers are stupid. I can't stand you motherfuckers. I really can't. And it's all good, though. Because his bottom line is back-to-back champions, the Miami Heat. So, suck a dick. And I've been running with him since Shaq. So, you know what I mean? People, you fucking bandwagon, really? So, fucking point out the fucking team I was rolling with the year before LeBron got there. Fuck out of here. Why was I happy you went to Miami? Jesus Christ. All right, so off of that. Oh, definitely I should have actually started the show with this, but rest in peace to Joe Bailey. J.C. Bailey's father had passed away on Father's Day. And, you know, the dude, he was a really, really good dude from what I knew of him. I only really got to know him over time of doing the show, and, you know, I did the J.C. tribute. You know, he came on it, and he was always just super, super appreciative to how respectful and how much respect I had for his son, and, you know, and just how much appreciation I actually had for everything JC did, you know, for wrestling, and, you know, what he meant to us as fans. So, and then I would go out, you know, and get all the guys, you know, the guys I did together to do JC tribute, and I did it twice, and I'm sure I will do more. And he was just always so down to earth and just so from the heart, and he was really, really appreciative that I would do that. He came on the show a couple times. You know, I'm going to work on pulling clips and stuff from that too, so I can keep some of his words alive and everything like that. And one of his wishes that he told a lot of people is that everybody just keep his son's name alive. And that's something, you know, I truly believe he deserves. And I think we should all, you know, continue to just honor his wishes the best way we can. I mean, J.C. Bailey was an unbelievable performer, you know, and of course, you know, beyond that, I'm sure he meant the world to his parents, you know, and to lose your son like that, that's got to be rough. I mean, no matter, you know, what anybody says about the situation, whether it's negative or positive, I mean, nobody wants to lose their son. So when you see that type of thing go on, you know, there's nothing that's going to bring your son back, and it has to just bring somewhat of a smile to your face to be able to see people still continuing to honor your son and remember what he did on this earth, whether it be, you know, in wrestling or whether somebody said, or, you know, whatever the case is, for other people outside of your family to continue to raise your, you know, your son's name up there, it's got to be a good feeling. You know, like I said, there's nothing that brings him back, but, you know, I think that meant a lot to him. And, you know, for JC and for Joe, we definitely got to keep that moving. And definitely rest in peace to Joe Bailey, because, you know, like I said, he was nothing but respectful to me, and he didn't know me from anybody. Just the fact that I was on air talking nice about his son and, you know, bringing people on to say things, you know, and talk about him. Yeah, you know, he couldn't have been a better dude to me, you know. So one more time, rest in peace, Joe, and you'll be missed, man. Hopefully they get some bullshit podcast up in where you're at, and maybe you could check out some of my stuff, you know. And hopefully, you know, we'll just keep, you know, putting your son's name out there, and you know, now you're all together, you know, both of JC's parents are up there with him. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's rough stuff. And, definitely, you know, my heart goes out to Kim and because, you know, she lost both of her parents, her brother, and all of that stuff. So, that's got to be unbelievable hard. Unbelievably hard. So, I got some other stuff to talk about, too. I think I'm going to take a, you know, play a song, take a break, and then come back with some other stuff after this. Let me see what I got. Yeah, let me go with some of this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let me tell you something now. I was in front of the Apollo on Amateur Night. It was after the show. The moon was right. The move was Willie Perks of the red zone. I was in my MPV, I was all alone. A lot of out of town people asking me for my John Hancock or my signature. I gave it to all of them because I was down to earth. And plus, the Apollo is my home turf. So I walked across the street from 125. I saw this pair of shoes that was really live. It wasn't just a pair of shoes that was on her from the ground up. She looked like a plate of lasagna. I said, hey, shorty, not you, your hair. She turned around slowly and started to stare. She said, why don't you take a picture? It lasts a little longer. Me liking you grew a little bit stronger. She asked me what's my name. I said, Emma's Emma's. The name that your mama gave you is what I prefer. She asked me, what am I driving and how's my health? I know what you're really thinking, baby. Let me tell you, I could do bad by myself. I don't need no help to starve to death. I could do that alone. I could do bad by myself. I don't need no help to starve to death. I ain't trying to be funny, honey. She started arguing with me and say she's not like that. I know who you are. I don't care if you're living fat. Because I have a mother and father to take care of me. And I'm living in Long Island with a J-O-B. Okay, okay, I got you wrong, I must admit. I'ma give you a little time to see if you're legit. So we started going out on a regular basis. I was taking her to the movies and my hangout places. Like the Q Club, the Scene, or the Arcade. I thought this relationship was tailor-made. Cause she was sweet, kind, considerate. I was hypnotized. Never thought she'd try to pull a wool over my eyes. After I smacked her and flipped it, she thought I was wet. I know she is like a knocker, but I'm not getting moved. Bitch, she asked me why I am so stingy. I know you got the end. Because you got two MB, two BM, the SL Ben. What if you're on my accountant or the IRS? Why you clocking everything that I possess? You want me to waste everything and be smaller than them? Let me tell you something, baby. Let me tell you. I could do bad by myself. I don't need no help to starve to death. I could do that on my own. I could do bad by myself. I don't need no help to starve to death. I ain't trying to be funny, honey. Now all her friends boosted her to get my dinero. Like if I was a drunk Mexican wearing a sombrero. I knew she had a boyfriend on the side. She told me, yo, she didn't have to hide. She said she quit him because he was too jealous. He always thought I was trying to talk to other fellas. It's now the present, and that was the past. From now on being with me, it's gonna be a blast. I know she thought in her mind, it's gonna be great. Juicing and reducing everything I make. What a Victoria's Secret's negligee. She tried to seduce me in every way. She would come out to Jersey, rain, sleet, or snow. She acted too blue to be after my dough. My man Jeff told me, but I didn't want to listen. I was too hooked and strung out. I thought he was distant. Then she popped the question and asked me for some dough. I looked her in the face and said, hell no. You're a head nurse and you want my wealth? You must be crazy as hell, cause I could do bad by myself. I don't need no help. I could do that alone. I could do bad by myself. I don't need no help to starve to death. I ain't trying to be funny, honey. Let me tell you now. All day long, you've been talking on the telephone, bragging to all your friends about all the cars that I own. But you don't tell them that I'm the one doing
on Stir Nation, we discuss Sal's marriage, the death of Derek the actor, eating placenta, and Jerry Seinfeld's first visit to the Stern compound. We have a lot to catch up on, so join us for a brand new Stern Nation. Go to sternnationpodcast.com for all the links.
Yeah, there you go. So, a couple more things. What the fuck? I'm trying to think. I had something on my mind, and then I let it slip. Wrestling. I just learned about the Kevin Steen show, and I've watched the Adam Cole one. I think what I'm going to do is kind of leave it alone for the most part. I'll just leave it at that. I think it's pretty fucking entertaining, and I'm going to try to pull some clips from it, you know, maybe for next week or something, and play some of those joints, because I have some stuff to say about it, but I think, like, it would work better if I'm able to play some clips and talk about it that way. So I think I'm going to do that. I watched some of the hardcore, what the fuck did they call it? The House of Hardcore or some shit. Watched some of that. The parts I caught was they were doing a bunch of, like, gimmicky bullshit. Like, I saw them do the fucking Harlem Shake, and then they were doing, like, the Fandango spot or with the chick and then the thing, and I was like, all right, well, here we go with this bullshit. Then they did Sammy MVP, and I thought that was actually a really good match. I liked it. They did good stuff there. I don't know. I want to say that this might be the last weekend for Sammy. I don't know if he's got other stuff lined up. I know he did a Sammy MVP on Saturday, and Monday they had a 2CW pay-per-view or something, but I caught that match on YouTube, and that was Sammy RVD, which to me is kind of like a dream match, because I've always been an RVD mark. Even though, like, over the past couple of years, haven't been so big on his work, because he kind of flatlined. He hit a certain point where, I mean, he was my favorite dude for years. ECW, that was my dude. I even got the fucking Mark belt, the TV belt signed by him and all that shit sitting in my closet. So, I gotta, like, find a place to put that shit, because it's retarded to just have that in the closet at this point. But, you know, it was kind of a dream match to me, and I don't know. Like, the match with him and MVP was a million times better. I don't know. I'd like to see what RVD could do if he's able to step it up for a final actual good run. He's going to be going in, you know, back into the WWE for Money in the Bank. And, you know, to go up in there against, you know, the Zigglers and these type of guys, he's going to have to bring a lot. I mean, if they put him in there with fucking, what's his name, Aaron Neville, you know, Pac, they put him in there with him, even like Evan Bourne. I mean, shit, even a guy like Kofi Kingston. I mean, you put him in there with RVD, you know, and let them try to put on some, as you used to say, five-star matches and shit. Well, you know, I mean, we'll see what he's got left. I'd like to see that he has something left other than just, you know, that basic five move joint where he just kind of like works those into the thing. And then I'd really like to see some really good work, some like amazing shit that you haven't seen before. I think he's been a little bit out of work doing the TNA thing, 'cause it's just coasting. And, you know, there's been a bunch of people doing interviews with him and shit. And like dudes thought he was retired. See, to me, I don't give a fuck what nobody says, like, hey man, a contract's a contract. And if you want to, if you want to work for TNA, I'm sure you're going to get paid more than the indies, or at least have more consistent work than the indies, and a better, like, consistent payday if you're, you know, under some kind of contract. I don't really know exactly what you make there, but it's at least some kind of TV shit, and it's at least some kind of consistency. So I understand it for that, but to me, TNA is absolute fucking garbage. Like, I don't give a fuck about it. I don't know when the last time I watched a whole fucking TNA show is. I think one of the last times Jeez was on it, I watched like I watched, I made sure I caught his match and stuff, and it was good for that. But I could give a fuck about that. I mean, when you talk about a company that's got Bully Ray as their fucking champion, that's their main event. That's like their flagship dude is fucking Bubba Ray Dudley. I don't give a fuck about Bubba Ray Dudley. And anybody that would put him as a singles wrestler that you would push, because he's been nothing but a tag team wrestler for his whole career. You know, anything they tried to make him a singles wrestler got fucking squashed pretty quick because he's just not cut out for that shit. Like, there's nothing about him that was pushing himself. You know, and he got in a little better shape and all that bullshit. But, I'll go out, definitely out on a limb and say a lot better shape. But to me, there's nothing exciting about the dude now that he's, you know, 40-something years old. I'm supposed to give a fuck about him as a singles wrestler. I mean, to me, it's garbage. And, you know, Sting, Hogan, all these motherfuckers up there, main event. I mean, Kurt Angle was a phenomenal wrestler. If his shit wasn't fucked up with drugs and everything and drinking and whatnot, he'd still be in the WWE. So it's not like you just put Kurt Angle there and be like, yeah, but they have Kurt Angle. No, they have a busted off fucking drugged out version of Kurt Angle. Now, hopefully he's clean now. Hopefully he's headed in the right direction. But he's not top of his game, Kurt Angle, because that was what the fuck the WWE had. And if he was anywhere near that for any length of time, I think they'd be looking at him to try to bring him back in and give him some kind of, you know, shine again or something. But it's just, it's too shady. It's too on and off. I mean, it's just like a burial ground for guys who were something or guys who would never be that. You know what I mean? Like Bubba Ray Dudley would never be pushed as a fucking main event singles wrestler on the WWE. I'm not saying every, you know, choice they make for main eventers on the WWE is my cup of tea, but I'm just saying there's nothing about that draws me to that fucking company. It's just, to me, it's just shit. Like, if they didn't have a whole lot of money to keep that company going, they would have died a long time ago. The ratings have been abysmal, you know, no pun intended with the abyss, but, you know, for a long time. And any other company running those type of ratings for as long as they have would have lost enough money to just fucking pack it in. But for whatever reason, they have this never-ending bankroll or whatever the fuck they got going. But it doesn't make me like it as a fan. I think it's shit. It's a knockoff WCW, and I like WCW. I was one of the WCW dudes, like, when those dudes were doing that, when they were doing fucking Scott Steiner in WCW, when they were doing the NWO and fucking NWO Wolfpack and all that shit, I was down with all that. And then they had the Cruiserweight division, and they were doing, like, all sorts of Il Lucha shit. I was really down with that. I liked that 100%. For the most part, I liked it more than Raw. Raw was good at the time. We're talking, you know, pretty much Attitude Era. But they're doing Attitude Era, so they were good for the theatrics, for the soap opera effect, for the, I mean, just the whole, like, storyline and the way that you could follow that shit. And they really had creativity, and they, like, you know, they popped you that way, where they would, like, draw you in and the theatrics of everything. And they had what you would call, like, your big stars, your movie star type characters. They're larger than life characters, you know? So it drew you in, and they, you know, they played everything out really well that way. Now, I'm not saying they didn't have good wrestling as well, but to me, WCW was more the wrestling company at the time. Now, you know, I could be wrong. It just could be my preference of what I was watching. But I did like the Lucha stuff. They gave that a lot more shine there. And then just a lot of the guys that they were doing, you know, they were doing things with there, I liked a lot. So, you know, I would give it 1,000,000% shine if it was a WCW that worked functionally in the same way. But for something about it, it's just not. And I really don't think Dixie Carter has the mind for wrestling that's going to make that company ever work or look legit and not look like it's put together by a clown who doesn't get it. Or, you know, if it's being pushed through the eyes of fucking Hulk Hogan, how fucking delusional has that guy been for his entire fucking career? And especially towards this end with this Hogan Knows Best and the fucking Bubba's wife and the sex tape and the just all the crazy shit that's been going on over the years with this fucking guy. You know, to have him be the creative mind around something. I mean, the dude got over on a pretty basic fucking wrestling moveset. Probably the most basic moveset you could find, you know, for decades. And I don't know. Kind of babbling on this topic. But you get what I'm saying? Like, it just doesn't appeal to me. I think the minds that are at the heads of that are just really not cut out to do anything cutting edge. Every time they do, like, oh, breaking announcement, this and that, now they got Rampage in there. It's just, it's all gimmick. It's all gimmick. I don't get it. It all seems washed up before it even happens. Like, they could launch some new shit, it's already washed up. Like, they're doing from what I, you know, and I'll catch little bits and pieces of what they're doing, but again, I haven't watched a full show in I don't know how long, years. I think they're back to doing Main Event Mafia, because that shit flopped the first time, so now they took a couple years off and started doing that shit again. Hey, you know, come on with this shit. And this fucking Aces and Eights, because they want to be, the hell's that show? Jesus Christ. Sons of Anarchy, yeah, that's the one. They want to be that shit. Come on, man. Nobody gives a fuck about that. So, anyway, that's just my opinion on fucking TNA. But anyway, like I was saying about Rob Van Dam and Sammy, I don't think it was up to pace, you know. It could have been a lot better, but I really gave a lot more credit to the MVP match, because MVP just came out of, you know, where he's coming out of. He was over in Japan busting his ass with these guys who fucking go. So he might have had his own little wake-up call over there, and came back and definitely works a whole different style now. Is able to work that indie style. The RVD, I don't know if he's ready for that fast moving, you know, quick pace stuff yet. I'm not saying he won't be. He's gonna be thrown in there with a lot of those type of guys. Money in the Bank match, you know, I'll talk more about that as we get closer. Definitely gonna jump into WWE in a little bit later. The other thing I wanted to hit was, then I also caught the Steiner Brothers versus Homicide in Kingston. It was good. I mean, I think it was more good just gimmick-wise. Just to see Homicide and Eddie Kingston in the ring with the Steiner Brothers is really cool. But, you know, I mean, it was mostly dominated, and you can't expect them to work some kind of even-keeled match. The Steiner Brothers are one of the greatest tag teams of all time. And I wouldn't say the greatest, but I would say one of the greatest tag teams of all time. So to put them in the ring with guys, you know, Homicide and Kingston, who are, you know, phenomenal guys on the indies, but obviously not known or put up there near the Steiner Brothers as far as, you know, household names and stuff like that. I mean, of course, I would prefer Homicide and Kingston on a card than the Steiner Brothers these days, but that had to have been a tremendous honor for those dudes to be in there with the Steiner Brothers. And, you know, it was what it was. It was just really cool seeing them in the ring with that. But, you know, you're not going to make any classics out of that. You'd have to have some really, really down-to-earth veterans to decide to work, you know, a really even-keeled back-and-forth match and like that. And, you know, it's not taking anything away from the Steiners, but, you know, it was what it was. Just really cool to see, you know, those guys in the ring across from each other. So that's that. What else do I got? Let's see. I should, by all means, I should be having Ian call in soon. Just trying to hit him up earlier to get him to maybe call in a little earlier because his B-boy wasn't going to be coming on, but I don't think he got my message. So I'm going to see. Hopefully his number pops up soon on here. And, you know, talk to him about the shows that he's been doing and the one he's got coming up and all of that type of stuff. I guess the thing I wanted to do... Let me jump into some WWE stuff. You know, I wasn't on last week, so I definitely want to more cover, I think, last week's Raw than I do this week's Raw, because I think the stuff that they were doing last week was a shitload better than what they did this week. This week was definitely a step down from what they did. You know, a lot of it is continuation, you know, and when you start off a big angle and stuff like that, it's going to pop a little bit more than when you just, you know, they you go up high and then you kind of hit the cruise control, you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what they did. I wasn't as big on this week's Raw. But last week, the Mark Henry thing, that shit was over like a motherfucker. They executed that shit fantastically. He really had everybody hooked. He did what he was doing. He was out there cutting a promo, crying and all that. And I don't know if they got some, like, they had some kind of creative meeting where fucking Vince or Triple H or one of them walked in and was just like, sat the whole locker room down, walked in with just like a fucking newborn baby and just had the motherfucker just crying, put him on the fucking table and was just like, that's what we want. Right there. Because, yeah, Caitlyn with fucking real tears and fucking Mark Henry with fucking real tears and like a short amount of time to execute angles, everybody fucking crying legit. So it's like they walked in, it's like, who could fucking cry? You're getting a push. Like, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but yeah, he was, you know, he had some fucking tears going. Or maybe, I don't know if he was just sweating from his eye sockets or what, because that dude sweats all the fucking crazy in the matches. So I don't know, but nah, he looked like he was definitely shedding some tears, and great acting by Mark Henry. You know, and, doing the thing with John Cena. It's going to be what it's going to be. The weird thing to me is no matter what they do, they turn whoever the fuck they want and have them slam John Cena and the whole crowd goes, yay, fucking Cena's supposed to be super face. And every time someone turns on them, they're trying to high five the shit out of new heel. You know, which Henry was a heel before, but they kind of just like did that Bret Hart thing where Hart would be a heel and then he'd come out, you know, after a match, you know, he lost to the face and he'd come out with his crutches and, you know, hey guys, I've been wrong in the past and just want to say I appreciate everything. That's what it reminded me of, is like, you know, he'd come out and he'd give the whole sympathetic, you know, I know I did a lot of bad things, but you guys got to understand, you know, I'm just a man, I'm a wrestler, and, I've been banged up out there, and I went down the road, and I've been away from my family, and, you know, I've been nursing this injury, and now it seems like it's the end of the road for me, and, like, really, like, to draw on the sympathy and shit, and call down a dude, and, you know, I just want to congratulate him. Before I go home with my family, you know, he was the one to get the job done when no one else can, and comes out, you know, and whoever comes out, and then fucking boom, he gets all fucking bow, fucking hits him with the crutch, and fucking, you know, it's back on, he's got the sharpshooter with the fucking crutch in there, and, you know, the whole shit. Yeah, the same type of thing. It was like heel, sympathetic promo, bam, back heel, what the fuck you think, you know what I mean, like that type of shit. So it was really, really well done. That's like kind of, you know, because it wasn't actually a heel turn, he was kind of a heel already, but he drew you back in then fucking knocked you back down, and I liked it a lot. But again, they do that shit with, they keep doing that shit with Cena, and man oh man, they just it kind of falls flat because people don't give a shit when people jump Cena. They hit Cena with every finisher in that fucking locker room, and no one's gonna go, oh, poor Cena, well, stop it, man, he's my friend. Like, no one's giving a fuck. So that's always the weird thing to me. And now, speaking of the last shit they did with Cena, actually, I don't want to keep him on hold or anything like that, so let me welcome back to the show Ian Rotten. What's going on, Ian?
Hey, Jay, how you doing?
What's going on? Yeah, we figured have you back on, and you just put on a show. Figured we'd have you back.
June 14th show went real well. June 14th show went real well. Old Scars and Bad Blood, and we drew just under 400 people. So, you know, I was real happy with that, and everybody went out there and worked their asses off, and a good time. Seen a lot of people we haven't seen in a long time, you know, running Southern Indiana.
Right.
You know, it's been 5 years or so, closer to six, you know. So got to see a lot of fans that we hadn't seen in a while, and got to see a lot of guys I hadn't seen in a while also. So it was a good time.
Yeah, that's a pretty good showing for being away for a while, and then putting on a show, and 400 people or just under 400 people.
Yeah, well, I mean, we worked real hard. We put out over 5,000 flyers for the show, and through people like you and another guy that does one of these internet shows, John Gray, who also refs. Putting the guys open and letting them promote the show and stuff like that, was a real good success. We could only possibly put maybe 100 more people in that building, so I was really happy, with things. BJ and Sabu was real good, I thought, and Chris Hammer freaking practically stole the show. Incredible performance in his match. I mean, crowd gave him a standing ovation, and our crowd's not quite a Philly crowd, but they're somewhat hard to impress. They've seen a lot of
right.
stuff, and so for them to give Hamrick a standing ovation was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and then you had the Taipei Tornadoes, Taipei.
Yeah, that was a brutal match that Simon Says practically kicking my front two teeth, me break his nose. I mean, it was a rough battle, and God only knows what was going over there with Axel and Peter B. You could definitely tell by that point of the show that the vampires in the crowd were ready for the blood. They were lusting. And they got a whole lot of it, we're coming back July 20th with a big show with Simple the Best Nine. We got me and Simon Says doing No Rope Barbed Wire Madness deal, and
right.
We've got Davey Richards taking on Scotty Vortex. Scotty Vortex is a guy that gets the hose bagged into that he's a deathmatch wrestler, but I truly believe he's just as an accomplished all-around wrestler as his fellow Naptown Dragon member, Drake Younger. And
right.
I don't think anybody questioned Drake's abilities nowadays. So I'm really looking forward to that match. And then we're doing another Styles Clash match with the master of it, the Necro Butcher. Will be taking on Kyle O'Reilly. That should be very interesting, to say the least.
A big thing going into this show is, you saw all over the internet, was the thing with Goldust. Can you give us a rundown on what happened there?
The guy took the booking and then, said, I need a deposit by Sunday, June 9th. I said, no problem. We'll take care of it. So, of course, we have 400 people. At the show, and of course I'm going to advertise the guy,
right.
He gets on the internet and starts, IWA Mid-South, why are you promoting me? And, of course, with things, unfortunately with me in the past, people start automatically sending me, stuff of, I'm false advertising Goldust and, all this other stuff. And, you're using the old card subject to change and everything else. So, I mean, by him going out and doing that, he put a really bad spin on things for, the potential draw of that show. So,
right.
I wasn't too happy with all of his demands in the first place. He had to be on a certain airline. He wouldn't do no jobs. He had to have a certain hotel. A lot of demands. I've never had somebody so demanding ever. And then he comes back with me. The booking wasn't final until he got his deposit, and says that his father taught him that. And I said, well, that's awful weird because your dad never charged me a deposit. So, I think that's his own rule, but he never said that to me or anything like that. You know, we were going to, you know, going to send him half his money on Sunday, you know.
Right.
He just, when he went out there and did that, that just really pissed me off because, you know, that got people, you know, thinking that he wasn't booked, you know. So then I had to go and you know, take the picture of the Facebook page and stuff and, you know, show people,
right.
You know, look, the guy took the booking, you know. So, yeah, I got quite upset with him. And I'm going to tell the complete truth. I told him, I said, you know, I always wondered about, you know, why Terry would be with a piece of shit like New Jack. And I said, but I guess after being married to you, that's an upgrade. And he got quite upset with that. I was really pissed because, you know, I had probably, you know, 20, 25 people, you know, sending me Facebook messages and stuff, you know, claiming that, you know, I didn't have this guy booked. And,
right.
You know, I don't need that when I'm doing everything I can to turn down, you know, our company's reputation. I mean, you talk about, you know, guys no showing or showing up. We had 33 of 34 guys show up that were booked. And the one guy that didn't show up was Scotty Vortex, who was still tore up from that awesome match he had with Danny Havoc at Tournament of Death. So we definitely couldn't hold that against them, you know, for not showing up. You know, so
mm-hmm.
I mean, I booked Davey Richards, and I was like, Davey, if I book you, you better show up, you know.
Right.
So I mean, I think I've been too soft on that in the past, you know, with guys, you know, hey, Ian, I got a, you know, booking where I can make, you know, three times the amount of money, you know, do you mind letting me out of my book? Sure, go ahead, you know. And then, you know, people are all pissed off, you know.
Right.
But I try to understand as one of the boys, if you can make that much more money going somewhere, then that's where you go, you know.
Sure.
Sabu showed up, was in good shape. You know, went out there and, mm-hmm. you know, tore up things up with BJ, you know. I mean, I just didn't want this shit starting all over again, you know. I mean, I wanted to nip it in the bud right there and then, and, you know, and I did. Yeah, you know, so.
Yeah. Now, one of the things you had mentioned, you know, and I saw it on the internet too, and you know, it kind of stuck out to me too, that one of his things right from the bat was no jobs. Now, I don't think, you know, everybody with a name should come in and lose, but, you know, I mean, you would know better than me as a promoter. Doesn't it kind of, you know, help to know that you're bringing in a guy with a name that might give one of your guys a rub?
Well, yeah. And I mean, but I mean, to me, and everybody knows what a mark I am for Dusty Rhodes, you know,
mm-hmm.
And to me, to ask that guy in the first place to do jobs is like, you know, spitting on Jesus in a way, because Dusty is my wrestling God, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, and even though I know it's just his son, you know, I was like, well, I can put up with that. Even though that, you know, and me and Axel had conversations about this and stuff, and I had talked to him with a couple other people before I decided to book him about it, you know, and they were like, well, you know, it ain't like you're using them on a regular basis, you know, where, you know, you can put them under to somebody and it works for them, you know, if you're bringing
right.
in just as an attraction, which is what we were doing, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing was, he didn't even realize he was going into a tag match, which made his night even easier, you know.
Right.
You know, we were looking at it as, you know, he's an attraction and, you know, an oddity, the freak show part, the star, whatever you want to go with, you know. So, you know, we thought putting him into a tag match gave us more options also. So,
mm-hmm.
but, yeah, that's kind of a dickhead demand, you know. So, I've never had anybody beforehand ever tell me, oh, I don't do jobs, you know.
All right.
you know, I had a problem a long time ago when I first started running wrestling shows with Greg Valentine, not wanting to do a job to Tom Brandy, and I told him just grab his shit and go home. But you know, he didn't say nothing beforehand, you know. But I told him, I said, you can find your own way back to the airport, you know, you can
right.
grab your stuff and go home if you don't want to do a job, you know. So I mean, normally I'm really kind of a stickler on that, you know, you're not that way. But
right.
I figured, you know, we're bringing him in as an attraction. We just we're getting ready to run our first show. We thought if it was successful, you know, mentioning a name like Goldust at the show would surely bring those people back, you know,
right.
Especially with putting it in a little angle and everything else that we did. But, you know, Dustin is no Dusty by far. Dusty Rhodes is one of the classiest, greatest individuals I ever worked with. And I don't just say that because I was a mark for him as you know, he was a wrestler. I mean, when he came in, he was just, you know, an absolute pleasure to deal with, you know.
Right.
Funny story that a lot of people don't know about is when Dusty came in, he came in October for me, and I had Terry Funk coming in December, and Dusty came in, bled, did a Ricky Morton hot tag roll to me and everything, and worked hard. So when Terry Funk was informed of how hard Dusty Rhodes worked 2 months beforehand, the expression on Terry Funk's face and I now know what I have to do. And, you know, we couldn't get him out of the damn ring. He was working his ass off. And, the guy was an absolute pleasure to deal with. And his son needs to learn a lot of things, from his pops on, when you are a star, how you treat people. You know,
right.
I mean, since then I've heard, you know, horror stories of, you know, a dude that did a podcast show wanting him to do, hey, this is Goldust and you're listening to, and the dude was told, oh, I can't do that for free. You know, everybody does that for free.
Right.
I mean, it's just a little deal you can do to help somebody out.
Sure.
But.
Yeah.
You know, our fans aren't even really worried about it. I mean, I've gotten so many messages of support, you know, of things. And Nate Webb's going to come in and tag with Suicide Kid, and they're going to be fans, bring the weapons against Terry Palmer and Mark Wolf. And people are so ecstatic, you know, that we're having a fans bring the weapons match. Because
right.
the first show was so funny, Jay, because everybody was messaging me, hey, can I bring weapons? Hey, can I bring weapons?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted to feel out the building and see how they were because, you know, we had problems with Mr. Wiseman again calling the building and trying to get the show canceled and all that stuff. And, you know, so I kind of wanted to feel out the building as far as how they were, you know, for the violence and stuff. And, you know, I go into the building's office the day after the show and make sure, well, the Monday after the show to see if everything was okay. And the girl that runs the place is like, I like blood and wrestling. That's why I watch UFC. I want to see somebody get their face busted in. So it's a good thing for us that, you know, the people that run the place are wrestling fans and, they understand what we're doing. I mean, we're not going over the top and busting light tubes and everything else all over the place and all that stuff, but,
right.
You know, some good hardcore wrestling and, everybody seemed to have a good time. I mean, tickets are selling pretty well for the July 20th show, and I think that's always a indicator if they had a good
sure.
time.
Now, this other situation, which you know was all a false rumor and everything with Necro,
right?
It's a topic that's been coming up a lot lately. You know, in you know, deathmatch scene and everything like that. And I mean, you've had the rumors started about you and everything else.
Right.
You know, people saying about the Hep C.
That's why I was Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. Finish what you were saying.
Well, I was just saying, you know, for those who don't know, it's, you know, it was a rumor about someone had said that Necro had Hep C, and then, you know, it gets spun and spun, and again, the thing was,
not only did Necro have the same rumor. This is how ridiculous it is. It's not only did Necro have Hep C, but Ring of Honor knew he had Hep C and let him go because of that. And then, you know, like, nobody at Ring of Honor publicly said, you know, anything, you know, at all. You know, mm-hmm. would be absolutely silly and libelous to the greatest extent. You know, and I have been falsely accused of that too. So I mean, it's something that hit you know home to me,
mm-hmm.
because I know what it feels like to have that put on you, and
right.
you know it's like you know. When you think about all the dangers there is out there in the deathmatch scene, it seems like this one's coming up, you know, the most. If somebody wants to, you know, character assassinate somebody, they're not going to go out of their way to say, oh, this guy's got AIDS. So now the next closest rumor that they can put fear into people to not book this person is, oh, hey, I heard they got Hep C. You know,
right?
Because I think the assholes out there, you know, think, oh, saying they got HIV or AIDS is taking a little too far, so I'll just say they have Hep C. You know,
right?
And it's a scary situation. You know, when you think of the life and times of, you know, superstar Billy Graham, the shit he's gone through and stuff like that, and. You know, I can't remember the damn guy's name right now, but you know, there's another guy out there battling it, and supposedly went through his last treatment and
right.
and stuff like that. I mean, it's not a death sentence, you know, like it used to be perceived, but it, you know, it is a scary situation and something you have to put a lot of time and money and work into to, you know, to get rid of. You know,
right.
So I mean. My whole situation was, you know, I have a bad pancreas from having diabetes, and it gives a false positive because it messes up the enzymes in my liver because of my pancreas being bad. You know, I usually go through pancreatitis, you know, two or three times a year where, you know, it'll not necessarily hospitalize me, but I'll have to go to the hospital you know, to get it checked out and stuff. So, I mean, I've been through it all, man. A liver biopsy, all that stuff, you know.
Right.
You know, what people don't realize is what they're doing there, you know, especially with Dylan is, you know, Dylan attempts to feed his family and, you know, live by just wrestling. And that's hard enough to do as it is, let alone
right.
that stigma put on you.
Sure.
Which, you know, I know personally, you know, when you have guys that you've bled with, you know, call you up and they're like, hey, man, you know, do I need to go get checked?
Right.
Know, that's just a shitty feeling, you know, whatsoever. And, you know, I'm sure Dylan's feeling the effects from that and you know, let alone, you know, he loves wrestling in Ring of Honor. You know, he enjoyed, you know,
sure.
Being there. So, you know, now it's a slap in the face situation to a really good guy, you know, by spreading that. But, you know, the thing is, like I tried to say, I don't think the person was maliciously trying to spread that. I think the people before that person was being malicious, but I don't think the person in question, you know, was maliciously spreading it. You know, they
right.
went to a promoter and said, "Hey, man, I heard an ugly rumor." You know, instead of going, you know, right to Necro and saying, "Hey, man, I heard an ugly rumor. Do I have anything to worry about? Is, you know, is this true?" You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, just went about it the wrong way, and you know. Hell, wrestling business is, you know, Hell, you know, we're like a bunch of women when we're in that damn dressing room. You know, we can talk about everything and anything.
Right.
So, you know, that shit can spread quick. You know.
Yeah.
It's an awful thing. Because on top of everything else, Dylan is such a nice guy and laid back and everything else. You know, I don't know why anybody would want to be so stupid to start a rumor like that.
Right. Another person who had went through pretty much the same thing, like you were saying, you know, with your pancreas, was Matt Tremont.
Yeah.
You know, he had had some problems with his pancreas, and you know, they went into Tournament of Death, and you know, the testing beforehand led to, you know, the false positives, and then, of course, you know, starting with the rumors, and he can't do it, then everyone's, you know, scrambling. And I think within that same week, Abdullah Kobayashi had the same thing go on over in Japan. So there's,
right,
what I mean, like a lot of mention in a very, very short time amount. And, of course, the rumors are going to circulate, and it's got to be hard.
Oh, yeah, man. Trust me. I'll give you the full tip on it. Do you remember when I was supposed to do that razor board match with that kid in Indianapolis? I can't think of his name. Brandon Prophet.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wound up being Corporal instead of me. Well, that was mm-hmm. when I got the news that I had Hep C. So, like, I immediately pulled myself out of doing death matches, because I was like, oh my god, and the first thing that runs through your mind is, okay, who did I get this from? You know.
All right.
And the doctor literally waited like a day and a half, and he goes, well, you should probably go get some more testing, you know, the way the enzymes are in your pancreas right now. And I'm like, you couldn't have told me that when you gave me the news that, you know, this might not necessarily be the case. And so, you know, eventually I went and got more testing and stuff, and, you know, was told, you know, hey, you're good to go. And then, of course, when I was working at Taco Bell and stuff, and, you know, people wanted to try to start shit with me there, you know, they're calling Yum Brands and telling them, you know, I got hepatitis and all that stuff. So, you know, I get pulled out of work and have to go to the clinic and get testing done, and, you know, have to go to U of L and, you know, get this other work done. You know, it becomes, you know, a pain in the ass. Just, you know, for your own sense of satisfaction of, you know, showing someone, you know, what this person's saying about me is not true, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I remember storming in Taco Bell because I was pissed off they took me off the schedule and like, threw my results down on the desk, and I was like, there, see? You know. When it's all said and done, you know, I hope that person is able to make retribution to Necro in some shape, form, fashion, because I know they feel bad that this situation has occurred. The thing with Tremont, you know, that was the first thing I said to Tremont. I was like, dude, hang on. I was like, you just, you know, we're in the hospital for pancreas problems, you know. Make sure, you know, before you start thinking the world is ending, that your pancreas isn't the problem instead of your liver, you know. That's what it comes out to be. And, you know, Matt's all right, which, you know, I'm grateful to God for. I mean, tremendous kid, heart,
yeah, he's a great dude.
Determination, and just a pleasure to be around. He's the first Matt Tremont, but he's the second coming of the niceness guy of Drake Younger.
yeah, he's definitely one of the most humble guys I've ever met.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, great individual. You know, to be around. And I'm glad. He's okay, because the future's bright for that kid, and he definitely, if he chooses to continue wrestling, you know, in death matches and stuff. He is definitely the heir apparent to the throne. That's for sure.
Sure. Another big thing you got coming up is something that, you know, a lot of people have been missing, and that's the Ted Petty Invitational.
Yes, sir.
So far, what do you got lined up?
So far, the tournament's got, you know, David Richardson, it's got Kyle O'Reilly, it's got Eddie Kingston, Devin Moore, a guy by the name of Jack Thriller, the serial killer, won a spot on the last show into the tournament. Little exclusivity deal here. As we're getting ready to announce Christian Hayne is in the tournament.
Okay.
Real good young kid. We got Andrew Everett, who apparently by Ricochet's standpoint is the second best high flyer in the business today.
He's amazing. On Facebook, he really is.
That's all Facebook thing that he sent to him saying he might slow down. The Ricochet might slow down someday so he can catch up to him.
Yeah.
But
he's amazing.
You know, we've got, you know, good contacts with, you know, quite a few other guys. We lost Jonathan Gresham to Japan, which that kind of saddened me a little bit. But, you know, hey, he's doing what he's doing, and he's doing it well. So I wish him the best of luck over there in Japan and stuff. So, I tried to get Reckless Youth Tom Carter to get to come back, but I couldn't pull that one out of my ass.
Right.
But, Me and Tom got to talking, you know, about how what a master Ted Petty was in the ring, from, you know, whether he was Flyboy Rock or the Cheetah Kid, you know, really didn't matter, or that little gimmick he had in WCW, you know.
Yeah.
Teddy was just an absolute incredible individual that really cared about other people and what he could do for the betterment of the business. And, that was the thing that saddened me the most, that I thought, man, if I can't get this back up and running and doing things, a few more years will pass by and people will forget all about, you know, who Ted Petty is. And that should never happen. 'Cause, like, unfortunately, it's happening with Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. Because, you know, people don't, they don't really remember past what I think is a generation. You know what I mean? Like, you know, guys that were superstars in my day, you know, are in their 60s and 70s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Guys that are superstars in your day are in their 40s and 50s. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's like, you know, for these young kids, you know, coming into the business today, unless they're, you know, really a mark coming into the business, you know, and enjoy the wrestling business as a fan and things of that nature, they're going to forget who guys like Ted Petty, you know, was, and Chris Candido, and, you know, and that's a shame, you know, because...
Yeah, for sure.
You know, people talk about Flair and Eddie Guerrero and they don't talk about him much anymore, but Benoit, you know, as Shawn Michaels as being the best, and, you know, that's all, you know, great in the talk of things, you know, but I really think, you know, a lot of guys are forgotten for more than just what they did in the ring. You know what I mean? Because Gilbert was such a great booker. You know, even though he had a tendency to put himself into things, that was because he could count on himself. You know, I don't really think that was ego. I think that was because he knew he could count on himself. You know, I've been in the same situation. You know, but Eddie Gilbert was such a great booker. I mean, I have, you know, 26 weeks of him booking in Birmingham for the Alabama territory, and just watching the houses rise as this guy, you know, is booking, is absolutely incredible. You know, so I think a lot of times, you know, people get left out for their contributions outside the ring, too. That should certainly, you know, be remembered. I mean, Eddie Guerrero, greatest transition wrestler ever. You know, I mean, nobody can touch him on that. You know, Sean's appeal was he drew emotion. You know, I mean, so each one of these guys have their overwhelming strong points, but you know, let's face it, you know, 20 years after their time, the new wrestling fans coming in will be going, "Who the hell is Ric Flair?" You know,
yeah,
they'll be like, you know, well, I knew Kane. You know, I mean, yeah. I just feel that the way things are, you know, from, you know, a standpoint of the business needs to keep the people that was key essentials to the business alive after their death, you know, because you can put all those guys up there and, you know, not too many people are going to mention Candido's name from a standpoint of a fan, but you ask a whole lot of the boys, you know, who's the best workers of all time, you know, anybody that's been around Chris is going to wind up mentioning Chris. You know, I mean,
right.
He was so good. You know,
right, and that's I mean, that's something that kind of stands out with Candido is because, you know, his thing was no gimmicks needed, which. You know, you
right.
watched him work in the ring, and by no stretch did he ever need the gimmick. But maybe that's also the thing that, you know, after his death is going to need a lot of reminding because the gimmick doesn't, you know, it doesn't stand out as, like, the picture that people see. You have to go back and know his work or see his work to actually appreciate.
Oh, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. The boys, you know, like, until the day I go in the ground – I'll tell you, Candido is one of the best I've ever, you know, watched, period.
Right.
I started watching wrestling in 1974, you know, you know, but I grew up in the era when I was with my mother and things like that in Maryland. Bruno, Backlund, and Hogan were, you know, the top guys, but when I was with my father in Florida, you know, it was Magnum TA, Dusty Rhodes, Steve Kern, Mike Graham, you know, those type of guys, you know, and while, you know, my friends were talking about, later on we'll be talking about Demolition, I'd be like, oh, wait till you see the Legion of Doom, you know,
right.
So that and satellite TV got me to see a lot of things, because a guy that was my best friend growing up that's worked IWA and some other places, Mark Wolf. You know, he had satellite TV, so, man, I'd go down to his house on a Saturday morning. We watched wrestling from 8 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock Sunday morning. I mean, we watched
right.
everything from Memphis to Pacific Palisades. You know, and, of course, watching the TBS block always. So, I mean, you know, we would watch wrestling by playing and then play this dice game that they sold in Pro Wrestling Illustrated, where you got certain wrestlers on a card and their moves was a certain dice number and stuff like that. And me and Mark would play that while watching wrestling.
Right.
So, you know, it's the people that love and adore the sport, the art of wrestling that need to remind people, and you should check out, you know, see, like, getting into sort of a different subject. When I teach wrestling, I tell people, if you want to visualize how to throw a perfect arm drag, you watch Ricky Steamboat. If
All right.
you want to see how to take a perfect hip toss, watch either one of the Headbangers. You know, I'm trying to think of their work names. Mosh and Thrasher.
Mosh and Thrasher.
You know, take some of the prettiest hip tosses that there is in the business. You know, I mean, they're a little older now. I don't know if they're doing the same thing, but, you know, I could literally remember, you know, Glenn Ruth. I don't remember which one it was, you know, but I'd give him a hip toss and he'd be up my head. So, you know, that's an impressive thing because the person taking a hip toss making the person in the ring look good. You know,
right.
So,
yeah.
You know, so I always tell people, you know, if you want to deliver a promo that people believe in, watch Eddie Gilbert's I Am the USWA promo.
Mm-hmm.
Because you watch that and you believe that that guy believed he was the USWA. And,
right.
You know, nobody really delivers that intensity that Eddie gave in a promo. You know, but you know, if you want to see, you know, how to drop a knee, you watch Harley Race. You know, so on. You know, I mean, no matter how many times you do that, if you can't visualize it being done the best, then you're not going to be the best at it. And,
all right.
You know, so as far as, you know, going back to the art of wrestling, Chris loved wrestling. So, I mean, everything he did, you know, even throughout the fucked up years, you know, he was out there trying his very, very best. And that's what made Candido so special. And, you know, you got guys, you know, in the business, few and far between nowadays that want to say to the young guy, hey, you know, I watched your match and da-da-da-da-da, and in a nice way, teach them. You know, I'll never forget Jimmy Jacobs asking Bobby Heenan what he thought of his match, and Bobby Heenan told him, don't quit your day job. You know,
right.
And I thought, what an asshole.
Right.
You know, and given, you know, dude was going through cancer and all that stuff and, you know, things of that nature. But there's becoming far less vets in the business that will teach somebody something instead of just saying, you know, oh, I went to this indie show that I worked the other night and they had, you know, this kid that was the shit. Did you say anything to him? No. Well, if you saw it, why don't you try to correct it? You know?
All right.
And Chris and Teddy both were one of those, you know, open guys, you know, along with Tracy Smothers, you know, mm-hmm. that taught guys things instead of just criticizing them. And that's why the memory of a guy like Ted Petty, and not really so much his accomplishments, but the person and who and what he was,
right.
You know, needs to be kept alive. You know, a guy
sure.
that would, you know, be more than happy, and he's done it for me on different occasions. Where, you know, Paulie wouldn't get me a room, but, you know, Teddy would let me stay in his room, and, you know, he would find refuge with, you know, someone else, if you know what I mean. So,
right.
So those type of guys that gave back, you know, to the business need to be memorialized, you know, I think. In my heart and mind, you know, a lot of guys have died since Ted Petty passed away, but he's the only one that I got in a car and traveled halfway across the country, you know, to say goodbye to. With the exception of J.C. Bailey and Rowan Hart, you know, speaking of funerals, what an honor has been bestowed upon my childhood friend Mark Wolf. He is going to be a pallbearer for Jackie Fargo tomorrow at his funeral, and that's an absolute just honor for him.
For sure.
You know, to be able to help say goodbye to true Memphis legend. I mean, and you know what the sad part is, Jay? Me and Axel, when we went to Memphis, we were supposed to get into a program with Jackie Fargo. And because we had a guy managing us that we met while we were in Dallas working global named Flamboyant Freddie Fargo. And our first TV in, Fargo messes up a finish. And me and Axel were a little hard on him, but we weren't, you know, over the top, you know.
Right.
But he got all pissed off at us and quit and went back to Texas. And so the program that we were going to work, Lawler and Jackie Fargo, went to the wayside because we teased our manager a little bit too much about fucking up a finish. But yeah, go ahead.
You were talking about, teaching and stuff like that. And, just wanted to ask you this too, because, I had watched this, shoot that they did recently. It was, Steen and, Adam Cole. And, Steen was talking to Cole about, you know, the training at CZW and what it was like and this and that. And Cole was saying that one of the first things they did was they duct taped the student in the corner, and then about 18 people, including the instructors, would just line up and just chop the guy. It was chop class, and they would just chop this guy until his chest was just bleeding, more or less. And that was, like, more or less the initiation. And Steen was laughing because he never heard anything even remotely close to that. And, you know, Steen was saying his thing with, you know, Jacques Rougeau, where sometimes Rougeau would show off and, you know, he was, while teaching chops, their thing was, you know, if you didn't get the chop right, he'd chop you back. And he said Steen, you know, he was horrible at chops initially, so he got the shit chopped out of him. But, I mean, what, you know, through your experience, what would you say to, you know, either one of those things?
I went through chop class too. So yeah. when I was brought into business, you know, 10 guys chopped the living shit out of me, busted my chest open and, and everything else. So, but later on in my career, when I wrestled Wahoo McDaniel and got my chest busted open, it was like, so what? I've been through this. I've done it, you know? Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know if there's really those guys out there nowadays that are the big heavy hitters when there's chops. You know, there's no Ronnie Garvin's and Flair and guys like Wahoo and you watch some of the Japanese guys. You know, are pretty big hitters if you go over there, you know. But, you don't see that physicality in matches anymore, really. So I think it is nowadays more of an initiation than it is training you, making your body accept what could possibly happen to you. I mean, because dude, when I worked Wahoo, the third chop he hit me with busted my chest open. But I didn't freak out or anything like that because, like I said, I had already been through it, you know. You have guys that, in this area, and I guess maybe you could put Roderick and Joe in there, Roderick Strong and Samoa Joe as far as the heavy hitters. You know,
yeah,
but,
Roderick
could
definitely throw chops.
Right. Cash Flow in this area, independent guy with heavy hands, Necro. So, depending on who you wind up getting in there, that might be a good thing to you where you're like, this don't bother me. But if some people look at it, as cruelty or whatever. I look at it as long as you're doing it for a purpose, whether you want the guy to come back or not is the big thing with chops, It's like you said, that initiation, but I think it's also the test, your toughness because this business isn't easy, physically or mentally.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You're gonna have people fuck with you, fuck man, actually used to do this thing to me when we'd be out eating. If he got done eating before me, he'd get in the car and leave. Like I would be like scoffing my food up, because I was just rookie on the road, and the veterans would get in the car and go to leave me, and being put in the trunk, and there's all kinds of shit, that was done back then, but I never looked at it as bad things were being done to me. I looked at it as, I was being made one of the boys,
Right.
And that occurs. That's one of the things I think that made Mickey Knuckles so good. When I mm-hmm. trained her, I trained her as she was a boy. I put her through all the same things. I would train any guy. And,
mm-hmm.
I think the guys on top of that respected her for it, because she first one putting up the ring, first one done doing her 250 Hindu squats, when I was in Japan, they do this gimmick where they throw a German suplex without the person there, and you land in a bridge out of the German. So I took that out of the Japanese classes, and I brought it to my wrestling school. And, I would have guys go, that's fucking impossible to do. And I'd go, Mickey, and she'd stick it, And,
right.
you'd have guys like J.C. Bailey going, oh, God damn, shit. I got to do it. Now the girl did it, So, if everything is done for a purpose, a true purpose, not just to beat the shit out of the person, I think that's a good way to train somebody, because also it teaches them right off the bat, that this is a rough business physically and mentally,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's you go. I went from Baltimore, Maryland. I wasn't in the business a long time. And me,
right.
Axel, this guy, the Wild Thing, AJ Fritzoid, another guy named Dave DeWave, and this guy, Steve Valentino, went from Baltimore, Maryland to Joplin, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
We wrestled in like a 12,000 seat football stadium in front of 26 people.
Wow.
So, when you're a young guy and you don't get paid for this, and I'm the only one in the car that has a job, and nobody else has got money, we go into McDonald's and order, 26 cheeseburgers, or whatever,
yeah.
to feed everybody. And then you go to the next town where the guy's promised that, he's going to pay you there, and you wrestle in a 5,000 seat amphitheater, and there's 30 people there, and the excuse from the people that they didn't come to the show is they just got cable with 64 big channels to choose from. you have a tendency to think, what the fuck have I gotten myself into?
Right.
So, you have to have some mental stability about you to push yourself past what is that physical pain with mental well-being. Like when I was getting the shit kicked out of me, I would literally think, well, when they're done beating me up, they're going to teach me to wrestle. You know, that's all I could think about with my first night in school was, when they're done beating me up, they're going to teach me to wrestle. And then I shit you not, my first night in wrestling class, I got German suplex off the top rope. And, dude, my toes touched before my head did, knocked the living shit out of my knees, hit me in the face. I mean, you know, and I could literally remember laying in the ring was spinning and stuff, and Axel going, well, that guy won't be back. You know, and you know, my first thought in my mind was, "Fuck him, I'll be back." You know, so your thought there is either, you know, "Fuck him, I'll be back," or "He's fucking right, I ain't coming back to this shit." You know, so you know, be sure when I say, you know, if you're trained properly, you're going to go through some anguish one way or another, in class. You know. You know, I'll give you another, for instance. Nikki landed wrong one time in training, and, I mean, dude, she sprained the shit out of her ankle. Like, I watched her ankle bend over. I mean, it was like one of the nasty basketball plays where the dude, you know, lands on the other guy's foot. You know, I mean, it was definitely an owie. And, you know, I fucking totally no-sold it, told her, you know, get the fuck up and do it again, you know. And I wasn't going to make her do it again because I knew she was legitimately hurt, but I wanted her to show me that she would get up and do what you know, was asked of her. And, you know, sure enough, you know, she got up and was getting ready to do it. And I was like, you dumbass, you ain't hurting your ankle anymore. Get out of the ring, you know.
Right.
But I wanted to see that she had that will to go on because you know, there's going to be those times that you get the shit knocked out of you in a match. And you're going to think, oh, man, I need to go home, you know, or you push past it and you keep going, you know, and a lot of people don't teach that, you know, you have to be able to suck it up, I guess. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, give me your $2,500 or your $3,000 and, you know, okay, this is how you fall, this is how you flip, this is how you run the ropes, you know. This is how you suplex somebody, you know,
right.
But they're not preparing them for the business. You know, the first 3.5-4 years of my career, I never took a booking. Axel took all my bookings, you know,
right.
Like we'd literally be driving to the show and I'd be going, what am I making tonight? You know,
yeah.
I never, we were in Global. They asked us, you know, well, they came to me and said, you know, well, what are we paying you guys? And I said, shit, you got to go ask Axel that. You know, I mean, he prepared me for everything beyond just what you do in the ring. And of course, that has to do with, you know, we were with each other 24 hours a day for 3.5 years. You know, whether it was, you know, we lived together in Global, we lived together in Memphis, you know, so I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why we got tired of each other for a minute, you know, because we were with each other so much. But I also got to learn and see how he would do it. And to this day, like I said, with the thing with Goldust, I called Axel. I said, man, this message I got from Dustin Rhodes disturbs me a little bit. Let me read it to you. You know, and I read it to him. He goes, "Yeah, that's kind of a crock of shit." You know, so I mean, I still, to this day, you know, 22 years in the business, look to my trainer for advice. You know, sometimes I agree with his advice, and sometimes I don't. You know. You know, but I mean, Adam. The only thing he went through a little bit more than what I do is the duct taping. I make you grab the second rope, and if you let go of the second rope, it starts all over again. but you know how many chops you're getting. You know, I mean, you get 10 right-handed and 10 left-handed, and from I don't know however many people were at the school that night that I deem worthy to chop the shit out of you, you know. And that's one of the things with me. I have to know you went through chop class in order to deliver chop class, you know.
Right.
Because I don't want somebody that's never been through this, you know, just getting their jollies off, smacking the shit out of some kid's chest.
Right.
So in the long run of it, I fully agree. I believe the wrestling business is becoming a little pussyfied nowadays.
Right.
You know, we should be cocky and police ourselves. If you got a problem, you say it, you know, and eventually, you know, it gets taken care of.
I understand that. I was just kind of curious.
People really don't teach that this is a hard business. A lot of people mm-hmm. teach, how much money can you give me? You know, because, let's face it, you know, young guy in the business, you could drive, you know, 10 hours to get $50, you know.
Yeah.
And you should really be happy. You know, that trip, the Joplin and the Neosho, Missouri, you know, since we didn't get anything but gas money, I lost like 100 by feeding the other people that were in the car. You know,
right.
But you know, that was what needed to be done. So you know that's done. Too many people, you know, just want the handout on things. You know, as far as you know, I've even heard wrestling schools. You know, if you can't pay your weekly or monthly, you know, payment, that you can't come to class. You know, well, if I've already invested that, you know, that time in you, I would rather you pay me when you can, and or work it off later in shows, and you still come to class, you know, because mm-hmm. that's what I'm looking to do, is make a wrestler. I'm not looking to become rich off of that person. And I mean, I've seen it where, you know, I've been helping at other schools. Well, where's such and such? Well, they said they couldn't pay this week, so I told them to stay home. Well, that's fucking
right.
Dumb. You know?
No, that's understandable. Like I said, I was kind of curious because they were talking about it, and they seem to both have completely different experiences. And, you know, you're someone who's trained people and obviously been through a lot of training, so I figured I'd ask.
Dude, I was training with Max Thrash up at Max Thrasher School. Axel took me up there because that was the closest ring, and I was taking flip bumps one day, and for some reason I couldn't land flat. I don't know why, but I just couldn't. Like I couldn't get the mental image of once I flipped just to land and stop. So like I would rock up. Axel called it the Weeble Wobble syndrome, but
yeah,
but. Every time I rocked up, dude, he kicked me in the face like 3/4 speed. And if I threw a bad punch, you know, I got punched in the face. You know, if you did that
right.
to a lot of kids nowadays, they'd be like, this is bullshit. I'm getting hit in here. You know, I mean, it's not ballet.
Right.
And if you teach anybody otherwise, then you're just fooling them into believing what's actually going to occur, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe in the roughness in the training. Like, you know, if you mess up something in my school, your punishment, you know, could be 100 Hindus. You know, so if you fuck
right.
10 things in a night, you might do 1,000 Hindus. You know, and if
right.
I see you anguishing over that, that's what I'm going to hold above your head, you know, that you're going to do more Hindus if you continue to mess this up, you know. Because
mm-hmm.
not only is it a punishment, but it has the purpose of, you know, building your legs and your wind. you know, beyond that. At one time I had like a 95% dropout ratio in my school. Like it was ridiculous how many people mm-hmm. I had drop out, you know. For the people that, you know, made it through it, you know, Rolling Hard, Mickey Knuckles, Cash Flow, me, Mitch Page, you know, they also had to bring something, you know, of desire to the game too, just to push past, you know, what I was doing to them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's just my opinion. I find too many schools nowadays are just are reaching their hand out for a payday, and just, you know, glorifying the business. Oh, you're going to make this much money, and, you know, no, you ain't. You know, I tell people right off the bat, you know, if you're looking to get rich, become a professional wrestler, wrong business. You know, because most of the guys that come into a wrestling school are 5'10", 5'11", you know, however much soaking wet. You know, they're not what, you know, Vince McMahon is looking for. You know, if you have a guy 6'3", 275 coming to your school, you're lucky. You know, most of the time people that come into a wrestling school are just looking to be on the indies. You know,
mm-hmm.
they have some gleam in their eye of someday being in the WWE, but I tell them flat out, look, if you're looking to be rich, you know, you're looking to be famous, you know, you might, and this isn't the case anymore, you might get laid a little bit more often by the rats, you know, it's not those days anymore. Now that's really cut out too.
Yeah. There's no pay then.
Note that.
Yeah.
I mean, Philly, you know, Philly and, you know, Memphis and, you know, Dallas, you know, used to have a ton of women. You know, now it's, you know, you go to indie shows there, it's, you know, bunch of, you know, young guys or middle-aged guys, you know, just looking to see somebody get dropped on their head.
Yeah.
The saying in the business used to be that, you know, your business is how the women are. You know, if you got a bunch of women in your crowd, you got a good business going. You know, when we were in old Kmart building, we had rats fighting in the crowd over Ox Harley. So
wow.
Yeah. you know, those were the days. Mm-hmm. You know, funny story is one time Ox knocked Corporal out with a moonsault. He moonsaulted and misjudged it and hit Corporal in the head with his knees and knocked Corporal out. And Corporal woke up in the hospital with his rat on one side and his girlfriend on the other. and he was like, he said to me, I thought, boss, oh, fuck, I done died and gone to hell. I mean, could you imagine waking up from being knocked out and that's the first thing you see?
Yes.
So, I mean, but the business ain't quite like that anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Ted Petty, like I said, you got this coming up, and as you were saying before, people are pretty much betting against you. And, you know, I've already seen that, well, look at what he's booking. It's all of these names that are never going to happen. And, you know, what kind of, you know, assurance do you have that for sure you're going to execute it this time and prove everybody wrong, and then it's going to be, you know, again, back on the map as one of the premier tournaments on the indies?
Well, I mean, for one thing, wrestling isn't my income now, you know.
Right.
I strive more now to prove people wrong. You know, like
mm-hmm.
Devin Moore was telling me after the show, people were coming up to him, you know, calling him and everything, you know, did Ian really draw almost 400 people? Devin was like, yeah, the place was packed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
only thing I can say, Jay, is you know, you can either, you know, watch and see, or, you know, you can be a part of it. You know,
right.
One of the two. I mean, certainly not hearing any complaints, you know, out of this first show. I surely hope, you know, nobody hears complaints out of the, you know, the second one.
Right.
You know, but the great part is with literally nowadays with social media, you know, if somebody believes somebody isn't booked, you know, and I hear wind of it, I call them up and be like, hey, man, can you put a thing on your Facebook? You know.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that you're booked for the show. You know, my guarantee is I'm only getting one more shot at being able to bring this company back to what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly ain't gonna fuck it up, you know, because this is IWA is my legacy. You know, though people may have known me from ECW and a feud with Axel, which, you know, I get all the time. You know, IWA is you know, what I want to be known for. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm so proud of so many things that we've done, and I'm not proud of, you know, a few things that I've done, but the good definitely outweighs the bad. And, you know, if there was the rise and fall of ECW, I want IWA to have the rise and the fall and the rise, you know.
Right.
You can either know that I have all the heart and passion in the world to do, you know, what I love and I believe in, and you can just sit around and hate and watch, and then, you know, you might believe. I don't know. I mean, you know, I guess it's the old saying, you know, you can't drag a horse to the water. You can drag a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, you know.
Right.
You know, I look so forward to resurrecting, you know, the Ted Petty, you know, coming back, you know, with a bang of that, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it means more to me than just a wrestling tournament, you know.
Right.
It's to show honor and respect to a guy that gave me a whole lot of that very early in my career when he certainly didn't have to. And, this business misses Ted Petty. This business misses, you know, a guy like Chris Candido. It's literally, Jay, I look at it as I got one more shot to redeem myself, and
right.
You know, or otherwise I'm going to have, you know, the rise, the fall, the rise, and the fall again, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't want that. I mean, people out there, you know, there's people out there that think I'm a scumbag and I'm this and I'm that because we were a little rough on Mike Levy, you know. And shit like that. But
mm-hmm.
like I said, I believe in policing ourselves. I believe in that the wrestling business is physical. It's rough. It's, you know, it's not a place for sensitive people.
Sure.
You know? I mean, but getting back to your question, I mean, I really have no way of saying, you know, oh, I absolutely, you know, guarantee, you know, this, other than saying I absolutely guarantee this, you know.
Right.
You know, beforehand I'll have everybody on Facebook, you know, and their social medias, you know, saying, you know, I'm looking forward to wrestling so and so, and, you know,
sure.
Everything else, you know. It's like I was real happy when B-Boy, you know, accepted the invitation. The first thing he did is is, you know, I'm into Ted Petty, you know, it's coming back and I'm in it. You know, so that's the enthusiasm I'm looking for everybody, you know, to bring to this tournament. Because, I mean, let's face it, man, the 2004 Ted Petty, nobody will ever touch. I mean,
yeah.
I know it's almost 10 years old, and it seems like, you know, I'm talking about the olden days, but, I mean, I don't know if I could ever touch that tournament because just plain and simple, the talent isn't out there, you know, for that tournament. Even if I wanted to book Mike Quackenbush isn't the same Mike Quackenbush he was in 2004, 5, or 6. You know, I mean, he's older, he's more beat up, you know, so on. So, and let's face it, there's not, right now, there's not another Mike Quackenbush on the indie scene, you know.
Yeah, it was an amazing tournament.
Right, so, but what coming back to with this edition of it is the thrill to know that the fans are watching, pardon the pun, the best compete against the best. And you know that's what I look forward to. So I mean, only real guarantee I have is my heart and desire to tell everybody that said I couldn't do it, haha, I did it. So,
all right.
Believe in my stubbornness to that effect, then you'll believe in we're going to have one hell of a show September 13th and 14th.
Good stuff. Yeah, we'll definitely talk again before that and have you back on before then, maybe, you know, even after this next show so we could talk a little bit about that. Do you want to, you know, plug, you know, where they can get the DVD or anything from the first show?
Yeah, I mean, right now we're building the website, but you can get it through the IW Mid-South Facebook, at any of those things, or my Facebook is under my real name, which is John Williams, and it has Ian Rotten. If you go under Ian Rotten, but it's Rotton, because some reason Facebook doesn't like to spell E-N. It made Axel spell it that way too, which is kind of funny. But yeah, I mean it's getting ready to go out here the next day or so, and I'm looking forward to people, you know, getting fast, quick service delivery, all that good stuff, and once again, I want to say, Jay, thanks for being. I don't necessarily want to call you a supporter, but a guy that's given us a chance to promote our product on your show, and always giving me a fair shake when others
absolutely
have it.
Yeah,
I greatly
not a problem.
Appreciate it, and definitely grateful for the opportunities.
All right, man. Yeah, no problem. Anytime. Like I said, we'll be talking. So.
All right, my friend. Well, I'm glad we made it through this interview. It's really storming really, really bad here in Louisville. I mean, crazy, like, flows of water going through the street. And they're calling flash flood warnings and all this stuff. Yeah, down by U of L, there's a dry dock, and it's got, like, 7 feet of water in it. So, I mean, I don't know why it's called a dry dock when it always has that much water in it when it rains hard, but that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Thanks for let me get on here. I greatly appreciate it, like I said, and I'm going to say this too. Congratulations on your winning the championship. I am not a LeBron lover, but
yeah,
you know, if you back it up, it's not talking shit. So he's backing it up. So. Of course, I'm going through my miseries with my Lakers right now. So, not even knowing if Kobe's going to play. So,
yeah. Well,
but that's for another time in discussion. But
sure,
I know you're
sure
real happy with it. But you take care, I appreciate the time on your show.
You too, man. Have a good night.
Take it easy. Bye bye.
All right, there's Ian Rotten once again, and like I said, he's a guy who
is always welcome on the show. You know, he continues to, you know, do his thing and, you know, prove himself as, you know, not such a bad guy as people make himself out, not himself, make him out to be. And, you know, that's what's up. And I think he was trying to call before he hung up the phone, call somebody else. So anyway, let me play this song real quick. I'll take a quick break and I'll, you know, hit a couple things when I wrap up at the end, because I had a few more things to say, but I do got to hit the bathroom real quick. So I'll take a shot. Be right back.
Let's lend a helping hand. Organized rhyme unit like the Poison Clan. While your ride is busted, I be your luxury sedan. Number one nigga in the chain of command. Breaking through in school like my nigga Ichidan. I see intruders on my scan. Singing at your funeral like Bobby Blue Bland.
Please, 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 turn it out. And make it wrong,
tonight on the Sports Den, Aaron Hernandez is charged with first-degree murder, 5 counts of a weapons charge. We'll bring in Christian Simpson to discuss that. Also, we got a special guest, Gerald Hoover, to discuss the NBA as the Heat are repeat champions. Also, some coaching changes as well. In the NHL, Shannon Coyne will come on to discuss the Blackhawks winning the Stanley Cup. We'll get into some baseball and news not related to sports. You do not want to miss the show tonight. We also have a mind-blowing announcement that we need to tell the fans. So join us tonight, utnsports.com, right after you're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. We also take live phone calls to 773-598-8876. That's 773-598-UTSN. Hope to see you guys there.
Yeah, there you go. So we're back. I'm back. I always say we. It's just me. It's like I have fucking multiple personalities. So, anyway, what I was saying about the WWE, it's amazing how they've completely killed Ryback through turning him heel. They turned him heel, as I was saying before. They, Mark Henry, you know, he smacks the shit out of Cena. People love it. When Ryback did it, people loved it. The thing that they did was they had Ryback turn on Cena. The whole crowd popped. So what do? They follow it the next week with Ryback in the backstage doing a promo on Cena and everything else. Now, they had him backstage because they knew if they put him in front of the fans were going to pop for his shit, and he was supposed to be a heel. So they were turning him a heel despite the fan support for him. I mean, really not that long after he got super, super over with the fans on being face. You know what I mean? And with the fans so awkward with Cena, I think they still needed that super face, that baby face where, like, so many kids were just going to follow this dude. I mean, when you heard the Feed Me More chant in the crowd, to turn that guy heel to me is fucking idiotic because he never got over as a heel. The fans still liked him. You had him attacking Cena. The fans loved that. And then it's like, all right, good. Well, you have him up in this feud with Cena. You have Cena go over to the point where there's no coming back. So they keep Ryback off for a week. They bring him back. What are they doing? He's fucking wrestling the Great Khali. You know what I mean? Like, they don't know what the fuck to do. And then he's up against Jericho, who Jericho has really never been a full-fledged face since he's been back. You know, they're kind of pinning him as that, but, you know, he was a heel for far longer than he was a face, so it's another one of those kind of awkward faces. It's not going to go fully in the direction of Jericho being face. It's just going to be another weird thing. And, you know, then Jericho's only going to be here for so long. You know, he's going to have another tour before you know it. They put Ryback over, and then what? Where does that leave him? I don't know. It's just, it's strange. You know, you had Mark Henry go over here at WrestleMania. You put him in the program with Cena. Cena puts him away. Now you got to build him back up because they knocked him down so far when he was a monster face. So it's really weird. I don't know where to go from here with them. I don't know. The CM Punk thing, I think they're doing good with that. They seem like they pretty much almost hit the light switch and just face turned them. And now they're kind of like pulling the reins back a little bit and going gradual. They want to like kind of make Paul, I think they want to make Heyman double turn on him. Because they kind of, you know, let it all that way. They had Brock come out, attack him.
after he says that, you know, Brock needs Heyman's help, da-da-da-da. So, you know, they had Brock attack him. Heyman's no-selling it. Say, oh, I never sent him out here. That wasn't my deal. And, you know, and all this other nonsense. And then, they, you know, he hugs him. He's sorry he doubted him. And then they're going with the Curtis Axel team up. Next week, they're going to be a tag team. And against CM Punk's best wishes type thing. So something's going to happen where it doesn't work out. You know, or, you know, we're going to see how it goes. But it seems like it's definitely leading in the direction of CM Punk's going to be a face, which I have no problem with. To see a CM Punk face and a Daniel Bryan face on TV working full-fledged, you know, athletic matches will be fucking amazing. I really want to see the Wyatt family come up soon because their promos have just been on fire. And the Shield is on fire as well. So, you know, the amount of young talent that's going to go over the top at the same time is just overwhelming. I think it's really good. Del Rio went back heel. I think that's perfectly fine. He was never good as a face, not for fucking one day. And then you got, it seems like I think they want to go face with Ziggler. I don't know. I mean, they're kind of hinting and dancing around a little bit with the who's going to be face and heel, but it seems like they're starting to lean in the right direction. Again, I don't have a problem with CM Punk being a heel. He does a great job as a heel. But I think a CM Punk-Brock Lesnar feud can go really well. I really think you need more TV time for Brock Lesnar. I don't know what the fuck kind of contract they signed, but if it doesn't allow him to have enough TV time to make an angle work, I don't know. Like, him popping up every 3 weeks, coming in, doing something, going home, and then, like, a pay-per-view match every two or three pay-per-views, I don't think that's enough. I mean, honestly, they need to work something out. I really think that's a shame if that's the biggest... if his whole contract is surrounded by... reliant on him barely being on TV, then that fucking sucks. I don't know. It's just hard with an angle. You don't need a guy on TV every single week, but you gotta come, you know, a couple weeks out of the month. It just seems like it's a 1 week gone, 1 week gone, 1 week gone. There he is, you know. So it's really hard to keep up with. And then they seem to be doing, there's no fucking way that this McMahon family thing doesn't directly resemble the Hardcore Pawn storyline. You know, if you've ever watched Hardcore Pawn, you get the father, Les, you get the daughter, Ashley, and Seth. And they all just fucking bicker amongst each other. They change the rules. They send the employees in all different directions, and then they scream at each other about all having different opinions, and it's my store, and it's my store. And that's exactly what they're doing with Triple H, Stephanie, and Vince. It's exactly what they're doing. It's fucking Hardcore Pawn, the wrestling version. It's fucking hilarious. They should just, like, and... They should just, like, sell shit out of the back and just fucking, like, have people come in, sell them their gimmick. Oh, I'll take your El Generico gimmick. What is that worth? Fucking, oh, what is that worth? Oh, that seems like it's worth a bunch. I'll give you $20. You know, okay, now you're fucking, you're Sami Zayn. That's what you are now. Oh, okay, yeah, that, oh, that seems like it. Chris Hero? Oh, it seems like you've had a lot of years invested in that. Okay, yeah, you're Cassius Ohno. Okay, yeah. It's like the pawn shop of wrestlers. They're just buying their gimmicks that were worth far more to them and giving them nothing for it. And then, you know, maybe eventually selling it back to the public at a marked up value. So I don't know. Nick's saying, it's a couple of pay-per-view matches, no Raw matches at all. And that's true. It's not like he's even working Raw matches. At the most, he's going to run in, he's going to do a little bit of things, and then he's out of there. That's it. And you'll see him, you know, the payoff will be
I honestly think they're probably not even going to pay this off at Money in the Bank at all. I really think you're definitely going to see and I think CM Punk is actually in the Money in the Bank match, so that's almost confirming that. At most, he could go in there, do a run-in, and maybe cost CM Punk the Money in the Bank match. But this is going to be a SummerSlam match. You watch. I mean, it's only another month. They're definitely going to put it off, play it off even longer. And it's going to be a SummerSlam match. It's just is what it's going to be. Because I'm pretty sure I already saw CM Punk listed for the Money in the Bank ladder match. So they're not going to, Brock Lesnar match is going to have to wait another month. And they're going to play that off on TV and do whatever they can. I don't know. I just think it's ridiculous. It's such a limited angle. The Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton feud is fantastic. I mean, what they're allowing Daniel Bryan to do, what they did with the Singapore Kane on Monday. I mean, Jesus, they're just putting on lights out matches. Daniel Bryan is working at 100 miles an hour. And I couldn't be more happy for the guy because they're really not limiting this guy at all. Yeah, it's great stuff. And I hope Ziggler's healthy enough to be back on TV on a regular basis soon. I know from what they're saying, he's still banged up. Something, it was a hard concussion or something that they're really being cautious about. But we're going to have to see. I think that's about all I got for tonight. I definitely want to play the Wrestling Soup commercial and the Women Love Wrestling thing. Don't want to leave them out.
Shut the fuck up if you will, but this is down.
Your only number that rules.
Find your name on it.
15 p.m. Thursday night.
And Women Love Wrestling.
We're Canadian. We sound like white girls, but we're black. Plus, we love wrestling. We make fun of others and ourselves. Join Melanie and Corey every Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Listen live on Blog Talk Radio. Subscribe and download on iTunes for free. WomenLoveWrestling.com. We're not your average chick.
I'm going to get more into the WWE stuff in the next coming weeks. They definitely have my eyes open to some stuff where I was kind of checked out with them for a little while. And I definitely have to talk about the upcoming July CZW show that to me just looks like absolute shit. And I'm going to have to... go over that. But, I got time because there's still just really nothing popping up that I give a shit about. But, I think that's about all I got. And, I'll check you guys out next Wednesday. Next Thursday is the 4th of July, and I'm going to have another crazy fucking barbecue that's going to hurt for a week. And then, from there on out, it's nothing but fucking severe fucking training and getting serious business for this Warrior Dash. So, I got at least one more rough weekend, and I'm really, really going to try to focus on after that. This is going to be a fucking crazy barbecue. This the food's going to be bananas. But, hey, let me pre-show that next week, all right? So, play a couple little outro things for everybody, and I'll talk to you guys next week. Peace.
There's a party for the pussy, but the pussy's closed down.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Kill 'em all. Back on top. Think about it. Fuck Hulk Hogan.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. That's Yakuza Kick Radio. And we're taking over!
And we're taking over! And we're taking over!